This is Upstate's HealthLink on air. Linda Cohen here with you. One of the most embarrassing medical problems for adults is bowel incontinence, the inability to control your anal sphincter muscles. And while it's not usually a sign of a serious medical condition, it can seriously interfere with daily life. But now there's a new treatment that promises to help. And here with me to tell us all about it is Dr. Margaret Plosick. She is a colon-rectal surgeon with the Colorectal Surgery Associates of Central New York at Upstate's community campus. Welcome, Margaret. Thanks for coming
in. Hi. Thanks for letting me be here.
So help us understand when we talk about this problem, what exactly is bowel incontinence?
Bowel incontinence is basically the uncontrolled loss of stools, whether it be liquid or solid. That's the baseline definition, but there is a lot of gray area. And to be graphic, there are some people who have staining and soiling, not full incontinence, but that's all part of the scheme of incontinence and all can be treated.
So it's in a continuum in a way.
Yes.
From the very minor problem of perhaps just a little soiling
right.
to a major loss of bowel.
Yes.
Of stool. Okay, so how prevalent is this?
It's actually a major public health issue. 8.3% of adults in the United States suffer from some form of bowel incontinence,
Wow. Which
actually translates to about 18 million people in the United States.
Wow. Well, who's at risk? Who are we talking about?
There are four real risk factors to it. First is, unfortunately, advancing age. In fact, people over the age of 50 are at increased risk. And if you break that down to percentages, it's 11% of men over the age of 50 and 26% of women over the age of 50 will have bowel incontinence.
Why the disparity, I wonder?
Well, the childbirth, and that's the second risk factor, is parity. It could happen with one childbirth, but obviously the increased number of children you have, the increased risk of a direct anal sphincter injury with the birth, or the stretching of the muscles, the stretching of the nerves as the baby is delivered, isn't it a risk factor?
Is it also just the pregnancy carrying all that weight?
Not so much.
It's more the delivery
part of it.
So that puts you at greater risk. Therefore, more women
yes.
are involved. Are there other factors that play a role in terms of your likelihood that you might develop this?
Of course, if you had any kind of anal rectal surgery, that is a risk factor. And then chronic medical conditions, things like diabetes, will put you at increased risk of having nerve problems.
How about things like inflammatory bowel disease, Crohn's, or any of those kinds of things?
Not in the sense of what we're talking about. Certainly, those are much more serious and involving different mechanisms for incontinence than what I have already described.
Okay. So, basically, age seems to be, it starts to show up even if you've had, let's say, multiple births. It doesn't necessarily become a problem often until you reach a certain age.
Yes, in
fact. That seems to be the tipping point.
That seems to be the tipping point. In fact, that was our biggest problem until recently, is we really didn't have anything to offer somebody who was older. It's easy to see a young woman who's just given birth, who's clearly had a disruption of her muscle from the trauma of delivery, and going and fixing that. But then there was the majority of people who would show up later on in life, and fixing that muscle isn't going to work for them.
Oh, that's interesting.
And we really didn't have anything until 2011 to offer.
Yeah, well, we're going to get to exactly what that is. But currently, how do you diagnose it? Is it just the fact that you have the symptom, or are there other methods or concepts that go into the diagnosis of it?
Well, what we do is start with, obviously, if you have symptoms and you get referred, hopefully, and this is where it's the hardest part, and part of why I wanted to do the show is a lot of people don't like to talk about it, and there are many people come
understandably.
In, yeah, who tell me they, for years, never wanted to tell their primary care that they were going through this and finally couldn't take it anymore, and they were so embarrassed to have to bring it up. And so it is really rough for people to even make that first step for referral. But basically, what I do is I talk to them about their symptoms, and I have them actually do a bowel diary where they're actually documenting over a two-week period exactly what's happening. And that helps me
with
criteria.
Must be very helpful, yeah.
And then there's the physical examination, looking at if there is a disruption in the sphincter muscle and looking at the ability of someone to actually squeeze their muscle, because that's going to determine whether exercise is really going to be available to them as a treatment option.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen, and I'm here along with Dr. Margaret Plosick, and we're talking about bowel incontinence, and actually we're going to be talking about a brand new treatment for it. But getting back to your diagnosis, basically you do a physical exam, you do this history. Are there other tests that are necessary or any other things to confirm a clear diagnosis?
Well, first, obviously, although very rare, some causes of incontinence may not actually be the things I've described. And so if you haven't had an up-to-date colonoscopy and that kind of thing, we're certainly going to do that to rule out any other reason. The other things that I do is I'll do an ultrasound. It is not painful at all, where I'm actually physically looking at the disruption of the muscle to see if it meets a criteria where that I'd have to do something first.
If somebody had some kind of an infectious process that would cause them to have diarrhea or something of that nature, is that also kind of evaluated to see, you know, like doing a stool sample and just seeing what the problem could be?
Oh, absolutely.
There?
And, you know, people can come to the office with complaints of soiling and stuff, but really the underlying issue, they may have weakness, but the underlying issue is something is going on that's giving them diarrhea. And certainly that always needs to be addressed first, and then you see what their baseline truly is going to be.
Right. So are there currently treatments that are effective, medical treatments that are effective, for example?
There are medical treatments. They are effective for mild incontinence, and that's where the stumbling block has always been. And they obviously would be first line, although many times people have already come to me doing the medical treatments and have failed. But the four things we do recommend is dietary improvements. So just as we talked about with diarrhea, we want to avoid diarrhea. So if they're having some sort of issue with gluten or something like that,
sure,
we want to get rid of that so that we know truly this is their baseline.
So would you recommend things like increased fiber, for example?
Yes, that would be definitely the next step is bulking agents. What bulking agents do, one, it dries up the stool. The drier your stool is, the harder it is for you to have a leakage.
Mm-hmm.
And it increases the sensation because of the bulk, and it really increases that signaling of the nerve to your brain.
How about things like caffeine? I read somewhere that you might want to avoid caffeine, for example.
I think the only time caffeine plays a role, some people are very sensitive and it stimulates them to have a bowel movement, but really, I don't really recommend it because...
Avoiding it. It's not,
it's not going to make such a huge issue that it's worth going without your caffeine in the morning.
How about drinking more water? Does that seem to make a difference?
Well, water and fiber go together. So certainly once you start with your bulking agents, you got to have water or it doesn't work.
Are there any other dietary things than what we've just described that you might also recommend?
Not any real dietary, but then there are anti-diarrheal drugs, such as Imodium. And initially, I do recommend that. And actually, a lot of people have gotten really wise, and they understand, like, if they need to go to a wedding all day and they don't want to have to worry about having an issue, they'll take an Imodium. It works, but the only problem is the side effect is constipation, and some people find that just too much.
So then it's kind of you go from one extreme to the other.
Yes.
So that's problematic. How about exercises?
Then there is biofeedback, which we actually do have locally, which is really great. It's non-invasive. It's very cost-effective, and in fact, there are many studies to show that it does work. The only problem is it requires significant compliance. People
kind
have
of a
to
commitment.
Do those, a commitment to those exercises. And after a while, it can be really rough for somebody to keep it up. And now that's, you know, of course, not every case of incontinence will respond to exercise.
But the idea is with biofeedback, just so we can help people understand, somehow you're getting a signal, there's some signal, and then you either use a Kegel type exercise, you're kind of tightening down and developing a feel for what that is. Is that how it works? What that
very,
feels like?
Yeah, very similar. It is very hard to contract your sphincter muscle voluntarily. And this is basically, you can see it on a computer through an electrode,
so
and you're actually contracting the exact muscle.
I see.
And then that teaches your brain and your ability, your memory, and then you don't need that after a while. But that's the way that's done, is just to make it more specific, because most people tend to try to clench their butt cheeks, and unfortunately that isn't going to do anything for you.
That isn't. That's interesting. So, but there's a surgical intervention before we get to your newest intervention. Before that, you were doing some surgery. What was that?
Used to be that the first line was sphincter repair. And those were reserved for those with the defect. And typically these are postpartum ladies. But what has been difficult with sphincter repair, and that has prompted looking for other therapies, is the long-term results are poor.
It doesn't last.
It doesn't last. And there is sometimes you can make somebody worse when you try to repair that sphincter. So we've always hesitated doing it because of these outcomes. And so that's where, you know, when you're older, up into your 50s, you really don't want to repair that muscle. Because the outcomes can be bad.
So just cutting into it could make it worse,
yes.
So to speak. Even if you're trying to tighten it or shorten it or do whatever, it can make it worse. So tell us about this new procedure. What is it called? What is it? And how was it done? Tell us all about it.
It's called InterStim Therapy. It is actually made through Medtronic. And the fancy definition of it is a neuromodulation, which enhances rectal sensation via the sacral nerve roots as they emerge from the spinal canal.
So what does it actually do?
Basically, it increases the communication of the nerve to your brain so that you have better ability to sense when you have to go to the bathroom to help reduce urgency and loss.
So it really is retraining. I mean, it's a retraining, but it actually helps the whole nervous pathway.
It's not really retraining. It's like a megaphone for that nerve to your brain to help really improve those signals that have really deadened down because the nerve has been injured.
So is it, I read somewhere that it was more than a one-stage process. How is it done? Is it inpatient done? And
it's outpatient. It's a two-stage process. And actually, it's really very exciting because it's minimally invasive, very small incisions. The first procedure is the initial phase, which it's a diagnostic test. And basically, I'm looking to see if you're going to respond to the stimulator and whether or not I'm going to implant it. So it's a temporary external
like
pulse
a trial,
generator.
Like a trial run.
A trial run for 2 weeks. And then if it's successful, you're going to go on to the implant. The implant, basically the criteria is you have to have at least a 50% improvement of your symptoms to be able to put in the generator.
And then it stays in. And what have been the results been?
The results are amazing, short and long term. And it's multi-center trials that have been shown, it's not just a whim, that 83% will experience a minimum of 50% reduction of their symptoms. And this is the best statistic, with 41% having complete continence.
Oh my goodness, that is dramatic.
It is dramatic.
Well, I think this is incredible news, and people can get some, we'll have some information on our website as to how they can get in touch with you or practice and learn more about it. But it's very hopeful, obviously, for people who are facing a very, very difficult situation in their lives. So I want to thank you so much for coming in and sharing that with us. My guest has been Dr. Margaret Plosick, a colorectal surgeon with Colorectal Surgery Associates of Central New York at Upstate's Community Campus.